So feel this as a companion, and we invite in and we syncretize all the qualities of wisdom from all the songs and all the traditions all over the world. We want everything, you know, because, you know, these are the waning moments of winter. It's the sun is in Pisces just for a little bit longer, and then it enters Aries tomorrow morning. So we're at the very last moment, the last round of Pisces, many planets, many parts of ourselves in Aries, again, to bring old things alive in a completely accessible vernacular, you know, to feel that each one of us has a mission and a medicine and something to contribute, something that we love that wants to be brought alive in a completely original way. We love that. But so the equinox chart really kind of guides the strategy for the season. And in Washington, D.C., it'll be different according to different times, but it's 6:29 a.m. East Coast time, and then different, but it's the same pattern and the same moment, just called different times. And in Washington, D.C., well, everywhere, the moon and Saturn are exactly conjoined the same degree. They'll be straight up overhead in Washington. And that degree in Sagittarius, its image, because each degree of the zodiac has a metaphor associated with it, is it's an ancient bridge, an ancient bridge. Mm. You go, oh, let all bridges, you know, let all walls become bridges, you know, it's this ancient bridge. And in classical astrology, the moon represents the people. We go, the people want diversity. You know, we know many things. You know, I liked the resonance of, there was 11-9-16, 2016, when this election was like, whoa, oh my God. 11-9-1938 was Kristallnacht in Germany with a rise of Nazism, the looting. 11-9-1989 was the fall of the Berlin Wall. So what I likened it to is the inauguration January 20th was like Kristallnacht, and the women's gathering globally around the world, and here was on the 21st was again oneness and through diversity, and was really like the fall of the Berlin Wall, but even bigger, you know, and more wonderful. I love the signs in London that said migration is older than language, and we go, oh, smart Brits, that's so great. I love all the signs here in D.C., you know, what do we want? Science-based policy, when do we want it? After peer review. It was so wonderful because 8 out of 9 people had never been to a large kind of roar before, and that was a great thing because there was no tired old, when do we want better chance? When do we want them now? It was fresh, and there was music and a cappella and witty signs and powerful atmosphere of oneness, you know, global oneness. Little 8-year-old boy, his mom said, he's so proud of this sign, he made it by himself, and it's a Venus and a Mars sign, and it says, you know, power comes from the beauty of difference. Mm. We go, yes, young wizard, how beautiful. So we'll have the moon and Saturn overhead, you know, again, this diversity, and we can see as much horror as being imposed, incredible beautifulness is rising. You know, the rising of the women's gathering, which is not going away, the power of indivisible, the power of people showing up at airports to embrace, you know, migrants, the incredibly poignant, sad stories of just needless cruelty being inflicted by these dementors who want to cause harm and loot things. Pluto is stationing death and rebirth, but it's stationing tonight and tomorrow and for quite a while at this particular degree in Capricorn, whose image is a hidden choir is singing. So it's a beautiful call and response. And, our beloved friend Jackie, when her husband Sheena died in tragic circumstance, but he was a protege of Baba Olatunji. So all these great drummers came to his funeral, and I double-checked with her. I go, this was really right? This really happened. She goes, oh, yeah. There was a moment where the drumming stopped, and then everybody could hear drumming from some other place. I get goosebumps every time I say that, too. And Jackie said, no, and remember, there was chanting in a language that no one knew, right? Mm. This call and response. So a hidden choir is singing. And it's also, you know, for those of us here, there's an incredible treasure here that's not really secret, but it's not tremendously known. It's now at the Smithsonian Museum of American Art. Does anybody know James Hampton's Throne of the Third Heaven? Yeah, you do. You do. Of course you do. But if you do and you don't, it's the one place I know I wanted to be on January 20th, going, where, oh, I want to go there. Because it's alive. And just briefly, you can Google it and see, but you can go down and see only a portion of it. But it was a humble black man from South Carolina with a humble job, but he had a vision in which the Virgin Mary appeared on top of the Capitol and told him to prepare the throne of the third heaven. And so using really gum wrappers over light bulbs, trash, he made this incredible thing, and very few people knew about it. Somebody took a photo of him in front of it, so one or two people knew. But he died, and a Washington Post reporter was going to rent the garage, and they opened it up, and they were like, it's like some Egypto-Aztec genius. It's unbelievable. And the only words in English are fear not, and then there's a lot of words in a language that people think is similar to Gullah, the kind of African language off of the South Carolina coast, but it's not quite, right? So it's just very powerful, and the hidden choir is singing. It was humming, on Inauguration Day. Well, it probably hums all the time. And there was nobody there. I was meeting other people coming in from out of town, and there was no one there. It was like, whoa! And for me, it's one of the secret souls of this country. It's like, whoa. And so it's alive. And it's there. You can go see it. I visit it increasingly often and wonderfully. So the hidden choir is singing. Tonight, the image for the moon, I kid you not, you look it up in a book, Steve Eardley's Sabian Symbols, and the image for the moon is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. And we go, woohoo, woohoo. And all this year, Saturn's going to go forwards and backwards over that spot. And it's like, the backstage gods are like, could we make it any clearer for you humans? Could we make it any clearer? The idea also is an egregore, is an autonomous psychic entity made up of and influencing thoughts of a group of people. That's just the kind of Wikipedia thing. But it's a thought form that people contribute to. And it's especially, I'm going to bring in Dionne Fortune in a moment, but she said especially if there are cultural icons, they can be brought alive. We go, yes, well, how about the Statue of Liberty? There she is. Bringer of light, modeled on an Egyptian woman and Native American imagery. So the egregore is an occult concept representing a thought form or collective group mind, an autonomous psychic entity that one can feed, and encourage. This city is full of templates laid down, full of Isis, goddess of nature, images. Outside the archives is a statue of Isis, the real Isis, holding the waters of life and the sheaves of wheat, and the archives are built on top of a place where they used to auction slaves when the River Tiber ran there. So the city, there's a great book, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, which is quite wonderful, not made up, really real, about things that were placed here awaiting animation. And I think it would be a good thing to do in this city to go around and go, yes, hello, you come alive, and yes, you come alive. That would be really good.
Wait, Carolyn, can you tell them about the anagram for District of Columbia? When she told me this,
right, it's an old sourdough starter, but I have a lot of that tonight, which is fine. Yeah, using every letter of District of Columbia only once, a proper anagram, you can rearrange it to spell, I toil bad cosmic turf. Right, so we're here on a mission.
And
we're here to toss the ring of power into the crack of doom. I mean, it's really inching it there. So Dionne Fortune, in World War II in England, the British government funded the witches and wizards to actually help protect England, because Brits are quirky that way. But Dionne Fortune, a great kind of spirit auntie, said she would send out, letters during the war to many people to seed positive prayers of protection and sanity that everyone would animate collectively. And it said that she believed that trained ritualists could combine their efforts to influence the collective, pluck up the will of the people, you know, as well. She utilized easily recognizable culturally based spirits and egregores whose meaning would be intuitively understood by thousands of people. I think the Statue of Liberty is pretty good. She drew upon spirits and egregores already associated with the purpose for which they'd been called. So it's also in our own personal homes, you know, full of props and altars and things. You go, who wants to come alive? Who wants to come alive? You know, and it's like, we do, we do. It's time for everything, all allies. So it said that she created simple acts of magic that could be easily imitated and contributed to by a wide range of individuals in disparate geographical locations. She was doing a working in a cause that thousands of people were passionate about. So as Allied Dionne Fortune was dedicated to planting seeds, we want to tricksterize it by, well, we'll do this at the very end of our convening, you know, medium soon, toss quickening lightning at the seeds. But we know in nature, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. When lightning strikes the ground, it encourages mushrooms to come up, right? So lightning has a fertilizing quality. And just little stories, large stories that come back to us now. I remember being with my wonderful friend Heather in outside Santa Fe and taking a hike, rock art. And she said she'd been sitting under this tree near this beautiful rock art, and this horsefly just wouldn't quit, like, so she finally got up and moved, and 30 seconds later, lightning struck that tree. So we go, the thing we might think is, you know, everything's talking to us. We're in a conversational, and if we don't get grumpy, right, if we go, but if we replace it with curiosity, then everything's talking to us in some way. Now, the Statue of Liberty actually does have a birth date, October 28th, 1886, 12:45 p.m.-ish. But it was when she was formally kind of inaugurated, again, the word augur. But quirkily, women were not allowed to attend the installation of the Statue of Liberty, so they got in their boats and they were paddling and going, oh, but it's a great chart. It's a great chart. She is alive. She is alive. Her rising sign is Gypsy reading tea leaves. Straight up overhead is Mercury and Moon and Scorpio, you know, on top of Bannon's Scorpio planets. I see your Scorpio planets, and out of the way, you mere whippersnapper. The image for her Mercury, 23 plus Scorpio, it's the same as Terence McKenna's son. It's a woman giving a sermon on a mount, and it's quickening. It's quickening. Uranus in the sky is transiting it. So things can come alive. Dead people's charts can become active. These are interesting mysteries. It's the Statue of Liberty. When the Statue of Liberty was dedicated, Jupiter was at 20 degrees of Libra. Right now, Jupiter's at 20 degrees of Libra. She's having a Jupiter return, right? And it is this embracing of wonderfulness. So, you know, just a Voice of America article was how the Statue of Liberty almost ended up in Egypt. Instead of imploring the world to give me your tired and your poor, the Statue of Liberty's welcoming message might well have been Assalamu Alaikum. The Arabic greeting. We go, that's wonderful. The Statue of Liberty creator, Bertholdi's original design, was for the mouth of the Suez Canal in Egypt. He was inspired by the Sphinx and the pyramids and the idea you could create something massive that could almost be eternal. Another article from the Smithsonian, you know, the Statue of Liberty was originally a Muslim woman. the new Colossus was born in Egypt. The Bertholdi, the French designer, found inspiration in Egypt. He visited Nubian monuments at Abu Simbel. I'm going to go there. Which featured tombs guarded by gigantic colossal figures. Now, the Egyptians really knew about thought forms, right? Really knew about imbuing statues with vitality, animating. You know, a friend of mine a long time ago was making a drawing for me, and he was copying from a postcard of Ptah, the great god of words, and words brings everything into being. And he said, and he's a reliable Pisces, he said that as he was painstakingly copying the drawing, he saw that there was this eye in the upper corner of the room scanning him, going, you know, basically, who are you? And he goes, I'm an artist, and I'm copying your work. And it was like, okay. Anyway, the idea of imbuing things, you know, and quickening. Right now is the quickening of that which has been dormant in our own lives and in the collective lives. So Bertoldi had a passion for large-scale public monuments, and it was inspired by Egypt. He envisioned a colossal monument featuring a robe-clad woman representing Egypt to stand at Port Said, taking the form of a veiled peasant woman. The statue was to stand 86 feet high and so on. And early models of the statue were called Egypt Carrying the Light to Asia. But then he comes to America. And I'm about to host people who wrote a quite wonderful book, The Secret Story of Our Lady of Liberty. Because when he comes to America, he sees Native American designs of women holding light. Women holding light. And he goes, right, that's really it. So my friend Deborah, has lived in Syria a great deal of her life and spent last fall there and got, you know, October, November, December, and came back with interesting reports of defiant joy and people still doing yoga classes in Damascus and many things and dancing their fear out and dancing their, you know, anger out and then just dancing their joy out. But Deborah recently said to a class I'd invited her to, she goes, you know, salam, meaning peace, and shalom, you know, Hebrew for peace. She said, peace is not the absence of war, it's the presence of oneness. I go, right, oneness. There's this great, beautiful oneness. And the micro and the macro is all powerful. A long-term client of mine, his name is Lucia, who's a midwife and a doctor that I've known for a long time and recently did an urgent reading for her about somebody she loves. And she's been working with Médecins Sans Frontières in Kenya, very problematic. But she met a wonderful young woman who'd been through incredible adversity. This young woman was the only survivor, we think, from her village that was burned in the Congo. She, at the age of 15, sets forth. Everyone who pretended to help her actually imprisoned her, raped her, kept her in servitude. She arrives in Nairobi, not speaking any language at all, is further taken advantage of, becomes pregnant. My friend Lucia adopts her. And Lucia's going back there. This beautiful young woman whose name is Hope was going to come to America to give birth, but Trump put a stop to that for the moment. But I want us to do a prayerful act of magic. Because right as I was coming here tonight, Hope gave birth to Rosie. Mm. So Rosie in Kenya was born this day, you know, beauty emerging from tribulation, the child of a rape, who is a loved child. She wants to come to America. Hope has a Sun-Uranus conjunction in Aquarius, journeying to this country. And so Lucia, whose name also means bringer of light, right? So we can all be statues of liberty, regardless of our temporary age, race, and gender assignment, all be bringers of light. All, you know, the micro circumstance of whatever comes to us going, oh, my goodness, the world is full of, how can I help this person? You know, whatever is before us, whatever we magnetize. You know, and so, so Lucia's been saying to Hope, you know, who's so smart, right? Who had never been? She took her on safari, right, out into the bush. She'd never been. She grew up in the Congo and then in Kenya. She'd never seen, you know, the Serengeti. And Hope did ask Lucia, who feeds these animals? You know, and Lucia said, no, these are animals in nature. Some of them eat grass. Some of them eat each other. And, oh, no, okay, no, but it's part of the plant. And Hope, speaking no language. That was understood in Nairobi, now learning English. Lucia gave her many blank books, and she's like, blank books, and a pen. She'd never had blank books and a pen. So everyone feel how wealthy we are to have blank books and a pen. And she's writing and writing and writing. And Lucia said, you know, you could go to the UN and give a talk. She's like, I could, you know. So, you know, she's like, I'd like to go to the UN to speak about, you know, the power of beauty triumphing over evil and about hope, because that's my name. So I'd like to invite us to welcome Hope and Rosie and see, you know, with the Statue of Liberty, and see the path unfurling before them, that against all odds they can make their way here. Mm-hmm. And so you have a beautiful song to guide us to that, right?
Yes. It's for the goddess of the ocean, Yemaya, and she is the one that always brings mothers, especially, to the safety of her shore. And so the song is about just the gentleness that we ask the ocean. We know that she's fierce and strong, but we ask for her gentleness in this moment. Yemaya, se suye, sing along, you know it. I say suye, maya. Yemaya, se su. I say, su, Yemaya, Yemaya, Olodo, Olodo, Yemaya, Parawayo, Yemaya, Olodo, Olodo, Yemaya.
So we want to take with us also the dream world and liberating language. The more language we know, the more our intimacy with the world. Eloquence has always been a part of, you know, indigenuity and our senses as well. You know, a study done in Scandinavia, children growing up without computers before the age of 10 perceived, you know, 500 colors in nature. Children growing up with computers before the age of 10 perceived 100 colors in nature, a diminution. And so, there's, by analogy, you know, a loss of nuance and color and texture, and the same with food. You know, we have, you know, Americans have been called gustatory morons, you know, salty or sweet, and it's like, no, we want bitter things as well, you know, and bitters. Or I always keep bitters beside the TV set, going, no, knock it back for digesting the news. So language, you know, looking words up is so wonderful. Where, you know, Jupiter retrograde says, take everything back to its originating, liberating impulse before it got bamboozled. And because I love words and looking them up so much, I often meet other word mavens, and we do word poker, going, how about this? And so a new friend said, do you know what charisma means? And I go, oh, no, because it comes from charis, which means from which we get charitable, from which we get Eucharist, from which we get cur, which is heart, from which in Shakespeare we get Cordelia, dedicated heart. So charisma means a charitable heart, right? It's not the swagger, you know, that's the toxic mimic of the thing. You know, we love that. And so, in rifling through my bookshelves, a wonderful, wonderful book called They Have a Word for It, which is just words in other languages that we don't have. Like, you know, in Russian, there's one word for somebody who used to be a lover and you like them a lot, but you're uncomfortable when you see them. One word, right? But I opened it up, and it was like, oh, a little note stuck in there from my own ancient ruminations, and it was stuck in with istikara, which is Arabic, a request for spiritual or practical assistance in the form of a dream. It's a beautiful part of Islam. So istikara, English has words for prayer and hope and concentration, but Arabic combines and transcends these three concepts with a word for the psycho-spiritual art of solving problems in your sleep, istikara. The Muslim tradition was built upon old foundations. For nearly 1,000 years, a large proportion of the Greek population went to one of the 300 or more dream temples at which the god Asclepius was said to appear. This is also very active right now. There's a little planetoid that really exists called Chiron, right between Saturn and Uranus. And some people who know about Chiron go, he was the wounded healer. Chiron rolls his eyes going, yes, it's true, but there's more to the myth. Don't stop there in some suffering credential. But what's poignant, so Chiron was the founder of the Asclepions, the ancient cultural centers of intentional dreaming, healing, and theater. And I've been to the ruins of one on the island of Kos in Greece. And Kos in Greece, you know, was a tourist place, but it's a primary place where refugees from Syria wash up, both dead and alive. And so it's, again, everything speaking to us. The modern world's cruelty and crisis is washing up on the ruins of what could heal it, you know, the Asclepion, that once cultures had ways of, you know, in which people gathered their wits, and a lot of it was also through dreams. So there's also another Arabic word on the next page, which is alam al-mithral, the world where images are real. So images, you know, all the Kabbalists, you know, all the ancient guiding wisdom systems, you know, say that images in our mind are made up of molecules as much as this table, this podium. You know, and again, the more we feed them, it's like the egregores, you know, again, the more we feed them, the more tangible they become. So again, that's part of our putting our hand, you know, on the tiller, going, wait, who's steering this ship here? And it's like, no, we are. We want to see sane, reverent people assuming there's the story-stirring stick, which is important, but also putting hands on tiller with the hidden choir supporting that, you know, really. So again, all of our imaginings. So we say, if Dionne Fortune with her team in World War II were visualizing depositing desirable seeds within collective mind, then let's imagine quickening those seeds with lightning. So we remember that Bodhisattva Coyote bestows upon us all a bag of liberating lightning. To break old spells, you know, just boom, the lightning, you know, strikes the circle of habit and liberates it into a spiral. There we go. So we all have that quality. One of the things I love working with people when people are talking about their trauma, and some people don't even remember what it was, but that they have one, and some is certainly real. But it's a good experiment to replace the word trauma with my dangerous, beautiful assignment, right? Mm. Just as Hope in Kenya is saying, I didn't go through all of that for nothing. I have things to say to the world. And she's met Lucia, who goes, yes, you do, and we will help that happen. You know, all of us, whatever we've been through is not like, oh, whaley, whaley. It's like, ah, we've been given an assignment to brew some medicine from that. I love that. So yeah, and one of the fun things, you know, to play with is just little changing of one letter, right? So you know, I've got to do this to I get to do this, right? I've got to is an external authority, Saturn, which creates resistance. And resistance as a word, I know it's everywhere. I'd like to transform it into persistence, because resistance is a good start. It's a good start, but it's a losing move in Aikido, again, because you resist against or resisting arrest. And so it's like, all right, it's a good start, you know, but let's have a plethora, you know, of words. Each one of us can, you know, more words, learning more words, looking up words in etymological dictionary. It just reveals themselves. The word privilege means private law. And we go, well, there you have it, right? The word respect means to look again. And we go, right, if we track everything back to its liberating kind of quality, it takes us back to this sizzling vitality. You know, and that's what we're doing in our own lives, going about everything, you know, in our own lives and in the lives of the collective. What did this want to be before it got hoodwinked or bamboozled? So do you want to guide us? You know, I'll set us up.
Yeah.
Okay. So just see, got to is external authority. Get to is Jupiter expansive. What a great opportunity. And you know, it's challenging. You know, I've got to go to the doctor. I get to go to the doctor. Even I've got to die. I get to die. You know, I mean, just all the way. You know, so you can feel the difference, right? Got to, get to. So Ami's just going to lead us in a little bit too, which is got to, and mudras are good. Get to.
That's right.
Okay, so.
I got to, into I get to, from I got to, into I get to, from I got to, into I get to.
Right, so I have had the cauldron here unused, but I think, you know, we might want to, you know, throw some amber dust, you know, the cauldron within a cauldron. So, you know, we might say, may anything up to no good, may anything not dedicated to collective well-being be revealed, rendered harmless, and in the fullness of time, an occasion for mirth. exactly, right. And may the Dementors of Doom, anybody want to, may the Dementors of Doom, you know, in some of the classes I've been teaching online, more coming, but I some of the classes people wanted homework. I'm like, homework? Well, okay. So and they break into little small groups online. And so I said, well, bless someone who's really done something terrible to you. And afterwards, some of them revealed this, and a woman said, I want to bless the Sinaloa heroin cartel because their poisonous product killed my son's friend and almost killed him. So I want to bless them back to before they began to do this terrible thing. What did they want to do before this happened to them? We go, all right, may everything be tracked back, you know, to what it wanted to be before it got bamboozled. And another woman said, I want to bless my former husband for being such a dingbat, because if he hadn't been, I wouldn't have realized how strong I am. We go, oh, good work, very good work. You know, to relationships that didn't work out, you go, thank God they weren't nicer, we might have stayed. Whoa, there we go, what a relief. So we bless everything. And again, it's spicy blessing, it's compassion with sizzle, it's, you know, it's fully informed, you know, which is the best kind. You know, it's all very well for people to go, isn't everything great? Although fewer people are doing that now. But it's like, no, you gotta really earn the thing, you know, to know how terrible it is and to bless it anyway. It can be fierce blessing, you know. May those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. Wow. Oh, I'd like that. I'd like that. Anybody else have a wish that they might want to put into the magic cauldron? Okay, you can just keep it private in your hearts too. But, you know, something to be liberated back, you know, again, where it can no longer do harm, you know, and be revealed, be liberated. Because remember, you know, Scheherazade, I'm wearing a kind of beautiful Scheherazadean jacket made by people in Afghanistan. Again, keeping beauty alive wherever there's uninitiated Mars, let there be Venus, beauty, music, all of that. You know, it's Deborah and I from Syria, in which she says, the beauty of the Middle East is that everything's woven underneath. Truly, it's woven by blessing. You know, the waiter who comes and says, anything else, madam, you say, salam tek, only your peace. You know, it's like, you know, the oppressor actually seeks the medicine of whatever he or she is oppressing. You know, India needed the metaphysic of India. So it's like the oppressed, you know, actually have the healing and the medicine for what is oppressing them if they only knew. And we might, you know, wish sane reverence. We might wish dreams of sane reverence. Again, we're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So we are venturing into unknown circumstances, you know, we want to do that with backup, you know, again, with our customized trickster selves and our feeling of everything that we love loves us, and that our lives are spiritual detective novels, and that whatever we've ever studied or loved, you know, is an important clue to be reverenced and honored. And if we don't know of anything, Neptune chimes in and says, wonder. Wonder is a wonderful thing. You know, when we wonder, we turn our body into a beseeching chalice of magnetizing inquiry, going, I wonder. And the backstage gods are very happy about that, because in modern world, people are supposed to be certain, although that's changing too. But, you know, everything now says certainty's a booby prize, although I'm not certain about that. it could be. It could be. But to ancient world, not knowing was considered a wonderful accomplishment. Look, each one of these people, you know, they've run out of certainty, and now they're available for mystery in the istakara, in the dream, you know, in life viewed as a dream, and whatever we encounter, you know, because we're heading into this increased realm of synchronicity. And even by just being here tonight, that idea of, you know, increased synchronicity. And part of Uranus Trickster's dynamic is it's that which is liberating, it's, again, intuition, it's wildness, it's autonomy, but it's dedicated to collective well-being. And the last ideas associated with Uranus are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And from experimenting with that, going, what do those ideas have to do with each other? It became very clear that when we look down at somebody or up at somebody, there's no synchronicity, there's no magic. The only way to be is really straight, how you doing? People have different roles on stage and backstage, older, younger, wiser, whatever, but the only form of address, and that's part of the dynamic, you know, to tease molecules of authentic democracy and ally etiquette into all of our ways of behaving. I work with a lot of progressive groups, and that often reminds me of Alison Laurie's wonderful quote, "The reason academic politics is so vicious is because the stakes are so small." So it's like, all right, everybody treating each other well is kind of crucial to withdrawing our complicity from tyranny, right? It's got to be authentic all the way. And that's part of journeying into the underworld. You know, we have myths and fairy tales and detective novels that go all the way back to 231 BC in China. And there's some really useful guidelines for now and for this spring and forevermore, really, which is it's useful to have a buddy. You know, Inanna had a buddy who negotiated her release from the underworld. You know, how wealthy we would be if we have somebody who would negotiate our release from the underworld, and how wealthy we would be if we had a friend for whom we would go to the underworld and negotiate their release. You know, yes, and thoughts went away. And there it is. Yes, underworld journeying. So it's useful to have a buddy because you want to make dark humor. You want to quip, you know, when you go to the underworld. And also when you meet, it's a theme from 231 BC all the way up into modern crime fiction, you can meet up to no good people, but very often a theme is they go, I was going to kill you or harm you, but I sense that you're authentic, right? To have ourselves match. So I want to join your team, but I have underworld skills you will need. This is really important for us now, again, as we are animating the irresistible, come on over here to sane reverence and ingenuity, and come on over here if you're a right-wing libertarian, you know, eminent domain, no, come on over here. There's a unifying story from diversity in which everyone is welcome, you know, and also about redemption. I mean, Milarepa is one of the greatest saints of Tibetan Buddhism, but he was a murderer and a highway robber, right, who then blooms, right? And so it was stated in 231 BC that the purpose of the detective, all of us going into the underworld, was to restore human affairs to be in accord with heaven and earth. In accord with heaven and earth. And so that's our small task. It's like the backstage gods have said, all right, humans here, create a culture of ingenious, compassionate, altruistic response rather than a culture of war. Do that by lunch, and we'll have some other stuff for you to do. So here we are heading into the new world, and you have a finale rousing call and response, beautiful thing.
This is actually a chant for you all to do all throughout, and it actually speaks to where she's going. It's a place in Egypt called Nusur Belledna. And it's not just a place, it also means back to your roots, back to the truth, back to your inner home. So the word is Nusur Belledna.
Nusur Belen.
Yes, if you all could just say, Nusur Belenna, Nusur Belenna, Nusur Belenna, Nusur Belenna, Nusur Belenna, till midwa, mifal nagini, till midza, Nusur Belenna, till midwa, mifal nagini, till midza, Nusur Belenna, la 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 la. La 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 la. Now go faster. No surbelena, no surbelena, no surbelena, no surbelena, no surbelena till midway. But this is where you start dancing, Caroline. No surbelena.
Thank you, team. Go forth and be woofy with your bag of lightning. Woof.
Thank you, Alma Carolina.
Caroline Casey!